Haunted History Chronicles, and part two of what is a really special journey with my guests Gina and Victoria from Haunted History BC. We've been exploring so far some of the history of the early English pioneers to British Columbia and Canada, along with the ghostly stories often associated with them. If you haven't already listened to part one, I would advise starting there, as this episode will be diving in and continuing where we left off. Today's journey will be a continued exploration of British Columbia, and we have some really peculiar and mysterious topic points that come through in the locations that have been picked for today's episode. So we're going to start where we left off, recapping how some of these locations began around these early settlers, and how the workforce was often comprised of people from many locations elsewhere. And to kickstart that conversation, we will be discussing a building that has been many things in its lifetime, and oh my, does it have some secrets and mysteries to share. So, just like part one, as Gina and Victoria mentioned, let's gather our wits and our lanterns and settle in for the stories to come. So it feels like British Columbia really grew very quickly around these certain industries and kind of different gold rushes, I believe.
Yes, there was a few things that drew people from, you know, all across the world. And so, you know, they all wanted to seek some wealth. Some were merchants who wanted to start up little stores. And, you know, there was not a lot here at the time. So it was a really good opportunity to start up something if you had the entrepreneurial spirit, which a lot of people did. So, yeah, that paved the way.
And a lot of people from England, Ireland and Scotland came out here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would imagine to work to help establish some of these, you know, new buildings, these new settlements, these new townships, mm-hmm. etc. So it's not just the kind of the entrepreneurial side that we've seen through some of the stories that you shared, but obviously there would have been all these other people, like you mentioned, from other parts of England, from Ireland, from Scotland, coming over to work.
They needed to build roads and bridges and just, you know, just get everything basically settled, you know. So
get the infrastructure.
Parts of the, you know, different cities. So yeah, it was a really necessary time to bring in some laborers as well. So people came from all over to just work here.
And you've got a particular building where that was very much the case, where a lot of the people involved in it were from all parts of England and Ireland and so on. And so
yes, we do. And this one's in Victoria as well. And it's the Hotel Victoria Plaza. And this one we've only seen from the outside. And so when we toured there, it was in 2018. But that's our next fascinating location. So the Hotel Victoria Plaza. And if walls could talk, they would have plenty of colorful tales to tell. This building was built in 1910. And the hotel went through a history of being many things. The population in Victoria, as we talked about, at the time wasn't such that enough workers could be found locally. So the hotel started out as a pub, where it was a nightclub for gangsters, and then later a speakeasy during the Prohibition days. And it was kind of a place that attracted, you know, everybody who was in town working. You know, you'd get your drinks there and just socialize in such a place. So there's a lot of energy over the years. And so the Victoria Plaza has seen definitely its share of stories of the supernatural. And so during the 1920s and 30s, and 30s being the Great Depression a lot of times in history, the hotels in Victoria came upon some hard times. And oftentimes parts of the hotel at this time doubled as a brothel. So you can interesting characters.
Yes.
So some interesting characters probably came and went during that time.
Shady
so.
Characters.
Yes. So that was the little brief history of that. And then in the 1970s, the bar actually became Monty's Showroom, which was a strip club. So this is kind of a new idea at the time. And so Monty's was, when it was first constructed, it was very popular. And then eventually the novelty sort of wore off. And I imagine, you know, again, it probably attracted some interesting characters. So the hotel changed hands yet again. And at one point, the building had a cowboy-themed bar called the Bucking Bronc. And it was complete with a mechanical bull, so it's probably like a fun place to go and have some drinks. And, you know, if you wanted kind of a bit of the cowboy influence, I guess, you know, the Westerns and everything. And then after that, it became, for many years, it was the Century Inn. It became the Century Inn, and which included a popular bar inside called the Persian Room. And this was pretty extravagant inside with the decor and everything. So it had that Persian influence and people went there to socialize. It was kind of a more of an upscale place after that. So then in 1988, After undergoing several name changes, the hotel finally became the Victoria Plaza Hotel. And it was once again a very popular and trendy place to go. So a lot of times during this time, a lot of people met their husbands, wives, and partners there. It was just kind of a go-to place. And in its heyday, it was a sophisticated place to go ballroom dancing, hear some music, and to gather for some drinks. So lots of ghostly activity occurred there in the building over the years. And so a woman who worked there would often see ghostly ladies and hear voices on the floors when no one else was around. So she believed that maybe it was from the brothel days. It was like some of the working ladies that
The
maybe
prostitutes,
worked
yeah.
there. So also people would hear voices in the women's washrooms, and some say they would hear voices and parties going on when the building was mostly empty. So that would be very eerie, I
That
imagine.
is.
It would be fascinating to go in and play music from around those time
Yes, it
periods
would
just
just
to
to
see if anything
see.
came through. Given that, if it was used for dancing and parties and just to kind of have that connection with particular songs that would have been used at the
Yeah,
time,
for
just to
that
see
time
if it kind of
period.
brought about any energy.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
sure sounded like it
looking
went
up.
through several different, eras, I guess. So, and then once the building was closed down, it became a derelict and abandoned hotel. And that's what we saw. So we were only able to tour the backside through the alleyway, and we took some great pictures of it. Unfortunately, it sat empty for many, many years. And in May of 2019, we found out after the fact, and this was after we worked on our calendar project and we featured it in the Victoria calendar. So we reached out to a local author, and he actually informed us and let us know that in May of 2019, the hotel actually burnt down.
It's almost serendipity again that
Exactly.
you went there, you needed to be there
We
for one
captured
of
the
those
photos,
photographic
and that's
remembers.
where the real life mystery sort of begins. And this is throughout our theme for this podcast of just stranger than fiction, I guess. So then unexpectedly, the hotel, after it burnt down, the caretaker who lived on the grounds too simply vanished. Nobody's been able to locate him.
That is very intriguing, isn't it? Like, to have no record of him anywhere else, no
No, he lived in
understanding of
this
what could have
Airstream
happened.
trailer. So we were actually able to take a picture. At the time when we were taking the picture, we did not know, of course, that somebody actually lived in there, but that was his residence. He sort of lived in this trailer outside the building, and he was responsible for the maintenance and everything like that.
And it was in a back alley because at that time when we were going there, it was a ghostly tour that we took.
Yeah, it was a Ghostly Walks Victoria tour. And so the tour guide kind of led us through there. And he also told us about some neighboring buildings that had some interesting activity and where they found things like construction worker, like bones inside the building, like behind the walls. And so this whole area was very, very eerie. And we were doing it sort of as the nightfall was coming. So it was really a great atmosphere for this particular
I was just
story.
going to say, but it was very atmospheric. But yeah, that's a real mystery. You have to wonder if you'll ever know as well, if there will ever be a reason and an
Yeah, no,
explanation for what happened to
the
him.
authorities came, and of course, because it was, burnt down, and there was a lot of investigations, and nobody really knows what happened to this, to this man. And so to this day, nobody has discovered what caused the fire. They didn't even have really an idea if somebody set the fire. It just happened because the building was old and there were maybe electrical issues, but still to this day, no sign of this missing caretaker. No body was ever found. So it remains one of the true life mysteries of that location.
Maybe we should one day follow up and just see, like, anyone can
We
give
might
us.
have to.
I was just gonna say that. And maybe one day someone will take over the building and it will get used again for something else, because it would be a shame for that to be the end of its story, given its very vast history and
Yeah, they
what all
said that
these
they're
different
planning
things
to
could
maybe build
mean.
something on that location again. But then you wonder if there's going to be a new location. Will it come with some old ghosts? That could be. It could
Possibly.
be.
Yeah, very much so. Oh, you'll definitely have to follow that one up and let
Yes,
me know if you
sure.
ever
Yes.
hear anything else. So, do you have any other interesting places in Victoria to
Well,
share?
as a matter of fact, the next topic is as well in Victoria, and it's an English inn. So actually the building itself was built in 1909 by Samuel McClure. He was a Canadian architect, and the inn was originally known as Rosemead, And I believe, Gina, you went and visited that area even prior to when I was there. You went
Yes.
there several times and you had the opportunity to see all the original old buildings because now currently some of them have been
Yes, so
demolished.
that's another place where we were very lucky to capture some photos because there were some buildings that were outbuildings that are no longer there, and we'll kind of talk about them a little bit more in
Absolutely.
here. So,
Yeah,
all
so
right.
it's a Tudor style building. So that just to paint the picture a little bit so we know. Also, the grounds are expansive. You can spend an entire day just touring the area. Beautiful gardens, pergolas, just staircases everywhere, inside and out. The rooms inside, absolutely beautiful, restored to their original. So after dark, the thing that many heritage buildings have in common is that they are abundant with many small dark nooks and crannies, old exits, and entrances. So many of those older homes give off the right ambiance if you're in the mood for a good ghost hunt. And as we did, we toured in the evening.
We
We
specifically went
did.
at night.
So they definitely, I know,
Lucky
and we decided to do our tour on our own. Again,
you.
not many guests around,
Yep.
but yet
No,
they were there,
they were there.
but we just didn't bump into anyone. So then what we decided to do, we went around the garden outside, took a little peek around there, and went inside as well. And lots of twists and turns, dark staircases, doors that creak, and ornate woodwork which surrounds you and takes you back into time. Now, we did talk to somebody who works there, and there have been some ghostly activities reported in the inn by staff and guests over the years. So, the grounds where we were, there were some eerie things going on there, apparently. When we were there, we had some several buildings we checked out, and they're the outbuildings as well. And they were exact replicas of the Shakespeare Village in England, and to scale, a replica of the Anne Hathaway cottage. And Gina, you actually took some photos of those.
I did, yes. So I got very nice photos of the thatched house. So the thatched house, and there's several of them around the world. There was replicas, and I believe that for the longest time they recreated the thatched house and the Shakespeare Village. And those, unfortunately,
Destroyed.
no longer exist either because there was a developer that came in. They're preserving the English in itself, but the outbuildings were all taken down.
Yes,
So,
which is sad.
yes.
So we also had an interesting session. We decided to do a Ouija session that evening. Did we not?
Yes, we took out the Ouija board, which we've never done before. We took it on this particular trip, kind of planningly, jokingly, seeing if we're going to actually use it
Yes.
or not.
So it
So,
was later that night, but we went into actually your room. We
yes.
decided to conduct the session there. And the entity that we were apparently communicating with seemed to be that of a young woman. Now, she came across not necessarily hostile, but the energy in the room felt agitated and there was a tense feeling. What followed after was definitely unnerving. So in the middle of the night, Gina and her husband William, they heard a door creaking open, and they could actually see in the dim light from the courtyard that it was the closet. So I'm not sure what we have
Yeah,
awakened, what
no,
we have stirred,
and it's
but
creepy because that you never sort of lose that like feeling like when you were a kid and you were scared of the closet. It stays with you when you're it stays with you when you're an adult too. So
Exactly.
it was very, very creepy
Absolutely.
to have that creak open like that. So
But all that night, you guys all had like quite, I would say, fitful night. Because then they also apparently they heard something falling near the dresser across the room, and it was like a clinking sound. And once they investigated, they found out that it was a bunch of couple coins on the
yeah,
floor.
we found like a couple of dimes and stuff like that. So we thought, well, we not, you know, and you try to explain it again and you think, oh, it just fell off the dresser or, you know, but it was happening at night. So
But it was you and your husband, so it wasn't
yes.
just one person
No,
imagining.
we saw that. It was really a little bit creepy.
Exactly, it
Yeah, that
is.
makes some
So, th
sense.
yes.
In a separate occasion when my husband and I were there, this was when we all three of us didn't go together, but we had stayed there previously. And one night I was awoken by a woman accidentally coming into the room, which was kind of strange because she came in and it was the middle of the night. And I remember waking up and she was dressed in a nightgown. And she said, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I think I have the wrong room. And I thought, oh my goodness, somebody's got the key to our room, right? So she goes out and I'm assuming found her room and I lock ours again. And the next day I kind of inquired at the front desk and they said, well, no, we don't really have, you know, we only have a couple of rooms. It was just like the real keys too. It wasn't like an electronic key where they made a bunch of them or anything like that. And they said, you know, but your door also kind of locks from the outside. So somebody can't just walk in without a
Exactly.
key. So I thought, that's really strange. But it was one of those things where I thought, well, was she a ghost or was she? But she looked solid. It wasn't like it was, an apparition.
But it was peculiar.
But you
Yes.
just never know. It's a place where you just experience a lot of strange things.
Yeah. So would you ever use a Ouija board again? Would it put you off?
Probably, you know what? It wasn't a bad experience for us, but since then we've read several books, and so once you get kind of educated to what it can unleash, like there are those that believe that you can potentially unleash some evil energies or demons or, so even though our experience wasn't a negative one, I think we'll kind of leave the Ouija board for now.
Yes, I think
So,
so.
I've
Yeah.
read since then about too many
I
creepy
think.
things on like shadow people and just weird things happen, like bad luck happening to people. So I think for the time being, that one's going to be left alone in the box.
We'll put it back on the shelf.
Yes.
I think people can be very, very skeptical about it. And it is one of those pieces of equipment that gets a lot of obviously coverage in films and things where you see that kind of thing coming
Yes.
through a lot. My take on them always has been that if you think about it in essence, you are simply asking the
Yes.
spirit a question and having a response. It's no different to calling something out and hearing taps in return. Can you give me three taps for yes, four taps for
Yes.
no type thing? Or having a glass on a table without even having a Ouija board and saying, can you move the glass to the left if the answer is yes, or to the
True.
right if it's no? It's not necessarily the piece of equipment itself. And I think that's my take on a Ouija board. I don't think it's
Yes, for
necessarily the
sure.
board. I think it's how somebody conducts a vigil. And I very much believe that if you're going in to explore any location, it's about making sure that you go in with a positive and a respectful demeanor and so
Definitely.
on when you're doing this, but at the same time, protecting yourself. So cleansing yourself beforehand, maybe just saying some words in your head to the universe to say, please make sure that we are going to be okay. And then just finishing the night in that same manner, saying, thank you very much. Thank you for letting me in. I'm saying goodbye now. You can
Yes,
stay here, type thing.
and I think too, a lot of times
Hopefully.
people have said that a lot of the energy is brought about by your own situation. So if you're a negative person, or if you've got even something going on in your life that might be,
Yes.
not that happy at the moment, maybe it's not the time to kind of reach out to spirits at that moment. So yes, I agree, can be probably just like a communication method, just a portal for communication and not necessarily a portal for something evil that's always going to
Precisely.
come through.
But what I found quite interesting is that we've never conducted a Ouija session before. And when we
No.
did, I was just quite intrigued by the fact that actually the planchette was moving.
Oh, yes.
I was thinking that maybe you were doing something and
Yeah,
then
but
you
you know,
thought
it
I was
feels kind of different,
different. It
it
is,
feels
yeah. It's a
kind
different energy, different pull.
yeah, so.
And you always have to be very careful using them, the lightest. Can you take your finger off? Is it still moving? That's when it gets in, that's when it gets interesting.
Definitely.
When it is really
Exactly.
just moving by itself. So you kind of say on your website that you've visited a few cemeteries, and I've seen some of the photographs
Oh,
there.
thank
So,
you.
are cemeteries a favourite outdoor location for you to explore?
Yes.
Any reason?
Yeah, we
Or will
like
you
to
visit
visit
them?
them a lot because I think not only are they beautiful and serene and nice places to visit, especially right now when you can't go anywhere, but also you can learn a lot of local history because a lot of people locally are, are pioneers that are buried there. And once you sort of start digging in, you see all the different groups of people that might have, been responsible for where you live and, how they contributed to local history and sort of things like that. So we like to kind of, a cemetery is sort of like a time capsule in a way because
Exactly.
it captures everything and everybody's still there. It's like a lot of things in the area can change, like, buildings can come and go, and even though they're heritage sites or, they don't always survive for whatever reason. But the cemetery is always kind of a constant. So it's a
Absolutely.
good place to kind of learn about those things and to educate yourself on what went on in that area and who was there.
And every gravestone
It sure
tells a story,
does.
doesn't it? You can see family connections. You can see some very tragic things written on them. You can see how young, how old somebody was. And again, you're almost like with a building.
Oh,
You
yeah.
start wondering, don't you? What was their life like? How did they live? What was their family like? You start to picture it in your head. And sometimes you can be so drawn to a particular story, a particular
Yes.
gravestone, that you want to go away and find out about it. And again, it
Oh,
just allows
definitely.
that person to live on. I'm with you. I think they're beautiful places to explore. I often like doing
Oh,
crazy
yes, for
things.
sure. And like in our local area, for example, we just went not too long ago, and it's not a location we'll be talking about in the podcast today, but we found out about Japanese pioneers and the indigenous people who had, a lot of times these burial grounds are shared by more than one group. And you see how it evolved, like how it started from one group and how, it was maybe a private cemetery. Then another group kind of came in and started theirs. And eventually they all start to belong to the city because they just are very expensive to maintain by, individual groups. But, then they become a city attraction. But, then you see all the different groups that were involved in the area and what influences they had on specific, communities and everything. So that was always very fascinating to learn about that.
And you've got one
We
particular
do.
cemetery that
Yes,
in
we picked this
Victoria
one
as
because
well,
it had
is
a
it?
haunted aspect to it. A lot of the ones we visit maybe don't have anything that is well known as a haunted location, but this one is also in Victoria, BC. So Ross Bay Cemetery is a Victorian cemetery, and it was opened in 1843. And like we said, it's a very serene place to visit with a very park-like setting and faces the Pacific Ocean. So it's just a beautiful place to visit. There's something very innately haunting about cemeteries, and that's what attracts us as well. So, Ross Bay is beautifully landscaped. It has mature trees, winding paths, and natural mountain views. So, lots to see there other than the gravestones. And then, one of the most notable people buried in the cemetery is a fellow by the name of William Barker, known as Billy Barker. And he was an English prospector. So he came from England to Canada and literally struck it rich during the gold rush. So he was one of those that, had a dream, came over, and he was the first to find a large amount of gold in the interior of BC. And now there's a town of
Wow.
Barkerville that's actually named after him. We have yet to get there. It's very far north and in the interior. And this year, as much as we can travel within British Columbia, we're trying not to. So it is something that we want to see as well. So,
That's fascinating, though.
yes.
Lucky
So
man.
one of
It
those
struck
folks
you
who
rich.
came from across the, ocean to, and he got lucky. So, and the original owner of the cemetery lands was once Isabella Mainville Ross, and she was the first female landowner and also an indigenous woman to own land in British Columbia. You find out these, fascinating tidbits like that. Like I would have never known that. But she was the sole owner of about 99 acres of land after her husband passed. And eventually she parceled out the land. And the cemetery now spans about 27 and a half acres. So it is quite expansive. And you can spend a couple of days to be looking around there. And many people have reported actually seeing Isabella. So she's one of the ghosts that are seen, sometimes sitting on a bench and longingly looking out towards the sea. So we don't know if she's waiting for someone. Or perhaps just she doesn't want to leave the place where her home once stood. Her home once was on the land, so she might just be lingering a little bit. And she is described often as wearing a long Victorian dress and is spotted gazing across the ocean. So other visitors report seeing an unknown couple in Victorian period clothing. And again, it's, from that time period. And they're described as looking at slightly transparent. And they're usually gliding among the gravestones at dusk. So if as just as the sun's setting and the light's fading, you might see this Victorian couple if you're lucky. And you never know, are they still doing their evening routine? Maybe they used to go for a walk. And then perhaps as much as we enjoy the ambiance of the cemetery, so do some of the lingering souls there.
It
Yes,
sounds
so
it, doesn't it?
they're maybe not wanting to leave. And why would you? You're facing the ocean and there's mountain views and it's quite peaceful
But
there.
it's a
So
very impressive cemetery.
it is.
And maybe because it's not too far from the ocean itself, that huge body of
Yes.
water, maybe it's again, linked to water
Attracting that
being a source of
energy.
energy. Maybe it's exactly. That's fascinating. That's really
But the
intriguing.
most intriguing story, however, is about a ghost of a young man named David Fee. So as we delved in, we found out about this young man. And so it was kind of a tragic tale. So it was Christmas Eve of 1890 when this young man, 21-year-old David Fee, son of a grocer, was in town to visit his parents in Victoria. And so David decided to walk over to St. Andrew's Cathedral on Blanchard Street, which is in the middle of Victoria, so it's a nice scenic area. At the time, it was the heart of the town, and he walked to the church for midnight mass with his parents because it was Christmas Eve. So, and he was also dressed in a white clown costume, which, seems kind of maybe strange to us, but at the time, it was a big thing to go to masquerade balls. So He had the intent of attending a masquerade party with his friends once the church service was over. After the midnight mass, as people slowly emerged onto the street, David was standing outside the church chatting before heading off to some more holiday festivities. And unknown to him, at the same time, a disgruntled watchman was at the cathedral as well, and he was downing his little bottle of whiskey and plotting his revenge on a fellow worker. So there were renovations going on at the church, and the construction worker had told the watchman earlier in the day to take down his Irish independence flag. So the watchman remembered this man wore a white coat, and he, you know, kind of probably made a mental note to take revenge. So he knew the fellow worker would be at the midnight church service, so he waited in the cold for him at the corner of the street near the church. The watchman, in his alcohol haze, saw David's white attire and, thinking it was the construction worker, shot David in the street. So for the family and the parishioners, the night before Christmas turned out to involve a sad and tragic case of murder due to mistaken identity.
Yeah, that is tragic, isn't it?
Yes, and so now what people say is they see David Fee's ghost is sometimes said to be seen outside the St. Andrew's Cathedral. And, you know, is he wandering because he's unaware that he's passed and maybe he's still waiting to take part in the nighttime festivities? Or occasionally he is spotted also at the Ross Bay Cemetery where he is buried. And reports say that his spirit appears as a veiled white mist. Probably from his white outfit. So I'm thinking that's probably the connection there. Yes, so that's probably, see, there have been photographs as well people have taken of his gravestone, and there's this white mist that appears off to the side or behind it. Very, very interesting.
Wow. Yeah, I definitely like to see that one. That's intriguing. And very
yes,
tragic.
And just such a story, because it's Christmas Eve, you're supposed to be happy, but, you know, it was just such a...
And
yes.
He was with his family and just, you know, going about his normal business on to celebrate the beginning of a new year almost, you know, upon him.
And I think that's why sometimes spirits are, you know, in a state of unrest, because it's something that was unexpected and unfair. And I think they're sort of still, you know, just lingering because there was just not much, you know, that they could do about it. And they weren't aware that this was something that had happened, so he could still be lingering, just completely unaware that he is gone.
That's a very haunting story. So you've got another interesting location, haven't you? A building that was actually built.
Yes, and this one is kind of a puzzle. Like, you kind of delve into it and people think when you tell them, oh my goodness, what? And so next we are going to the grounds of a local high school, which is not abandoned by just to make a note. It's still people are attending school there. So
of all the buildings, you would not imagine a school would be there.
No, and so the name of this school is New Westminster Secondary School. So it's been there for quite some time. And so the school, as it is, exists, it's not a very old building, and it was founded in the 1960s. With the building, the original building was built around 1948, and in 1949, it started out as Vincent Massey Junior High School, and it was opened. And so back in 1859, Queen Victoria actually named New Westminster the Royal City. So this, you know, this kind of connection has kind of stayed with it. And so the city still uses names in with many businesses like Royal City Jewelers, and the newspaper is the Royal City Record. So early in the Irving House segment, we mentioned New Westminster was one of the oldest cities in Western Canada. So you know, there are many stories to be told, and this is one of them. There are several ghost stories about the high school, and the most popular is about a boy who drowned in the school swimming pool in the basement during the 1980s. So we did look into this, and as we researched, we found out that the ghostly boy has kind of somewhat become more of a spooky urban legend, and this is not really a true story. The staff there say that there was never a swimming pool in the basement of the high school, and that the story is more of a product of people's faulty memories. So they remember that there was, you know, some people say we actually went swimming at the YMCA and it wasn't really the basement of the school. So it became sort of an urban legend. And though, you know, you have to admit that the thought of a pool in the basement is a bit scary itself too. So
little odd.
So that, you know, there's that. So if there was a pool in the basement, that would have been kind of spooky. But the real life facts proved to be much more disturbing. So before this location was a high school, there was a cemetery on the site where many prominent citizens were buried. The Chinese and the Sikh communities, as well as indigenous people, had burial sections there. So early on, the site was also served as a barracks during World War II for the Royal Westminster Regiment. So a lot of different things. Again, the building was many different things. Mm. And so some of the cemetery residents were moved, but many people remain buried on the grounds. And the building currently sits on land where graves still exist. And so if there are ghosts, this might be the reason. And there's also a lot of controversy because they've tried to, you know, kind of enhance the high school, kind of add to it, renovate it. But the thing that has been the stopping factor is that these groups emerge and they say, no, you can't, because, you know, our ancestors are still buried there. So it's kind of held up a lot of things over the years. And the school has never been renovated or anything because they don't really know how to properly move the people that basically are under the building at this moment. So it's kind of an interesting...
That is, because it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you've got to be respectful.
Yes, and we're not really sure either why some were moved and some weren't. We found that kind of exploring a lot of cemeteries that were a little bit older, like some of the residents were moved and then some just
remained,
remained there. So, and they built over top of them. So one of the most recent trips to this location, I just went alone to take some updated photos for the podcast. And it was a Saturday and the school was just so eerily desolate. And I'm sure what normally is a busy and, you know, busy place was so quiet. And especially now, I think sometimes schools are open on the weekends too. And, you know, before the pandemic, but it was completely empty and there was not a soul in sight. So I was alone creeping around. I took several pictures of the outside. And then once I was sort of satisfied with my outside pictures, I always kind of think in buildings, like even though I can't get in, but you can put your camera up to the glass if you can see a, you know, inside room or something, and it takes a fairly good photo. So I tried to take some pictures through the glass where there was no window coverings. And at one particular location, I noticed there was what looked to be like a small teacher's lounge. And through the glass, I took some photos and I was kind of look at them to see how clear they were or if I got the angle that I wanted. And in one of them, there was kind of a faint greenish mist on the left-hand side of the photo, where the other pictures that I took exactly at the same time didn't show anything. So I thought, you know, I'm just going to put my camera up to the glass and take a little bit of video. So I took about 20 seconds of video and I didn't really see anything. So I proceeded to take some final pictures of the grounds and then I left. And then once in the car, my husband was driving. So I was looking through some of the photos and including the video. And then to my amazement, there's a very definite mist that floats in the video from one side to the other side of the screen. And then it just simply vanishes.
And no explanation.
Yeah, no explanation. So this is really easily seen in the footage. And of course, with this podcast, we'll release the footage and people can judge for themselves. So we can't prove anything, but seeing that as there is the burial grounds there, I believe I might have captured an actual ghost.
Again, people can have a look and have a think for themselves. I think it's very unusual. I've seen it and it's not something that I can explain for sure.
Yeah, no. So it was unexpected. And I didn't actually see it when I was taking the video. So it took for me to look at it afterwards to actually see that. It didn't appear that there was anything there during the time when I was actually recording.
And it was during the day.
It was during the daytime. So I went during the day. It was the middle of the afternoon. Didn't expect to see anything. Like I said, nobody was on the grounds. Mm-hmm. It was just me roaming around. When I reviewed the footage, I looked kind of like you can see me through the window there, sort of with my camera sitting up against the glass. And I sort of looked, I focused in more at myself to see if anybody passed behind me that I didn't notice, which would have been extremely difficult. But nobody was there. There were no shadows. So this thing was inside and it really just passed outside my, outside the lens, like in that room. So...
And, you know, we've been talking serendipity and how some things happen when they do. And I was kind of telling you earlier about how a friend of mine who visited Pendle Hill, which has been a podcast previously, has visited there recently. And she's given me permission to kind of share this. And she had something similar. She was in the graveyard and just taking a series of photographs. And she captured something very similar. She captured this green mist just almost floating all the way across, so from one side to the other side of the graveyard, and poking through that, so in this series of succession of photographs,
you can see what looks like this figure amongst the gravestones, just stood and watching. And it's there pretty much for all of these different photographs until suddenly it's not.
Yeah, and I think sometimes...
In the next one, something walking towards her. Just the legs and the part of the body coming through the mist.
That would be, yes.
That is.
Yes, even photographs would be creepy if you're just taking a series of them and you see sort of an apparition. But I think sometimes, I was just going to say that I think if you go into a place and you're open to, you know, knowing that that could be a possibility, I think sometimes you see more things, and not necessarily because you're attracting them to you, but I think because you're paying attention. I think those things are around
exactly.
us kind of all the time, but you know, when you're not looking for them, you just don't notice them, or when you're distracted, or, you know, sometimes when during the day when people are there and using the room, you know, it just isn't maybe something that people would notice, but it's when you're in the quiet, when, you know, you're kind of just open to maybe receiving that information, and they sort of let you know that they're there. So
I completely agree. And I think the same is true for people who are sensitive or mediums and so on. I think they don't always pick up on everything all of the time. They, you know, they too have to tune into something, don't they? And I think the same is true of other people. I think there are lots of things going on around us all of the time, but we have to be open to
definitely
it and be ready to hear and to see and to spot it. So,
and something won't happen every time either. So something won't always happen. Like sometimes you're lucky enough to be at the right place at the right time, or I was just happy that I got the footage. I was shocked. And so it was kind of interesting that it happened when it did.
Fascinating find. Got one more location to share with us, haven't you?
We actually do. This particular location doesn't have actually many ghost stories, but is believed to have a couple of haunted objects and a real life tragic story. So for our next location, we're actually going to go to Mackin House, and this is in Coquitlam, British Columbia. So this is outside the island of Victoria. This is local. And Gina and I had the opportunity to visit Mackin House just not too long ago, just shortly before Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So since it was built in the early 1900s, the Mackin House has been a landmark in the community, and it's now a heritage location and a museum for educational activities and information. Now, there are a couple of objects in the house that are said to have some ghostly energy. So it is quite intriguing. There's a rocking chair and some dolls, but there has not been a great deal of paranormal activity there. But I believe one of our tour guides have mentioned that they are planning to have a paranormal group.
Yes, perhaps to do some investigations. Because it just hasn't been widely investigated either. So
exactly. So this particular day, we were there to see an extensive antique doll collection. And we only saw a portion of the dolls, as they are just way too many to display. The museum was kind enough to arrange a private visit, and we were able to select the dolls we wanted to see and to photograph. So Mackin House was actually the home to the general manager of Fraser Mills, Henry James Mackin. So at the time, Fraser Mills was the largest sawmill of its kind in British Empire. So once Henry was promoted, the Mackin family moved across the street in 1914, and eventually another Mackin family member moved into the house in the mid-1940s. So during the 50s, the house was sold to the Crown Zeller Bock Company and was rented to various tenants for several years. So we were able to see the entire bottom floor, as the top portion remains closed off for the time being. And we were able to look around the house and to take some good photographs, and also to visit the expansive grounds with several eerie heritage buildings we were able to see from the outside. Now, speaking to the guide, we did just inquire if there are any local legends or folklore or any type of ghost stories that she could share. And although there isn't much ghostly activity, we didn't leave without a spooky story. So apparently there was a boy who was injured by a vehicle in the street in front of the house in about the mid-1900s. And the boy, he made his way up to the steps of the house, but the people living there, They at the time didn't want to let the poor lad in because they were afraid he would bleed out onto the hardwood floors. And sadly, the young lad died on the doorstep outside the house, and the bloodstains were eventually removed.
That's very creepy. That is a very spooky.
Spooky,
thing.
Spooky.
Definitely a spooky one to finish.
And you sort of don't know, like, who would do that. Like, you know, he's just this young kid, and they wouldn't let him in. So it's very sad that he ended up passing away on the stairs. So if there's ever any paranormal investigations, they might be able to focus in on the stairs a little bit, you know, and see if there's any activity there.
But it's such a shame.
And again, definitely a place to
exactly
to see what, if anything, comes through.
Yes.
That's fascinating. Thank you so much, lady, for your time today. It's just been, I feel like we've had this journey through all these different kind of types of industry and places, each unique, each very different, with different types of things coming through, but also the different history to it as well, the different stories. It's been
it's been great to share.
To see how they've been shared. But to see, again, I think I said this at the beginning, to see stories that otherwise I wouldn't have known anything about that are linked to the UK, that are linked to British history. And likewise, you know, being able to share things that I found out from over here linked to some of those.
Oh, definitely. It's all connected. And it's just, it was interesting to kind of dig deep and exactly kind of why we like to, you know, research places. Because there's always, you know, just when you think you've learned it all, there's always a little bit more to the story.
And it is very fascinating, for sure. Yes.
Definitely. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And
you know,
thank
it was exciting
you, Michelle.
To
thank
share
you.
All these places. And so we hope that everybody is entertained by some spooky stories in BC.
And you're going to have to keep us informed.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes.
Those ones that maybe.
Yes, for sure. To see if any missing caretakers were found or, you know, any bones uncovered.
Definitely.
You know, we're always
or maybe
curious.
Some new mysteries we will be unearthing again.
Exactly.
And if you ever happen to go somewhere and you're visiting the attic at midnight and anything happens, you're going to have to let us know.
Oh, for sure. Yes. We'll have to report back with any exciting occurrences or, you know, spooky activity. So, yes, thank you for listening, everybody. We want to thank you, too. So
yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. See you
Bye.
Next time.
Bye.
Bye. And you've got an intriguing park to share with us as well, haven't you?
Yes, we do.
Again, something intriguing happens.
Yes,
there.
It sure does. So for our next location, an eerie location, takes you on a stroll through a stunning park. So it's a park again in Victoria, so called Beacon Hill Park. And the park has belonged to the city of Victoria since 1882 and has many scenic trails where individuals and families go to unwind. So it's a popular place, and if you're a nature lover, there's many different species of trees, there's flowers when it's nice out, and you can frequently hear the calls of peacocks, which freely roam the grounds, so you can see them. And we had the pleasure of going back in time and experiencing the park during an old-fashioned horse carriage ride. So these are very nice because the city offers the rides, and it's a great way to see the sights and to hear about the local history, because usually the tour guides that are giving you the rides are very well versed in all the buildings and the locations there. So they tell you about all the different places that you go. And so the spooky story of Beacon Hill Park begins during the 1970s. And many people strolling through the park or jogging at the time reported seeing a mysterious woman with long blonde hair in a darker complexion standing at the top of a rocky area in the park. She would just eerily stare straight out at the landscape. People who saw her thought it was strange because she simply stood there, silent, unmoving, morning after morning in the same exact place for several months. And then one day, suddenly, the sightings just stopped. She never reappeared, and the incident just gradually was forgotten. So then again, in the late summer of 1983, this is like fast-forwarding about 10, 13 years, a woman with a light complexion and dark hair was seen standing atop the same rocky area. And the local people who remembered the 1970s incident said she appeared to be the same woman, but almost like a mirror image. So she reminded them of the woman who was seen over a decade before. And those who saw her said that she looked as if she was an apparition because her face sort of appeared a bit misty and ethereal. And many people say they saw her in various ways. So sometimes she was sitting as if she was meditating. Occasionally her arms were outstretched. and her mouth was sometimes formed in what appeared to be a silent scream. So that was my particular freaky favorite. The 1983 incident was particularly terrifying because months after the mysterious woman first started appearing again, a murdered woman's remains were found near the exact location where the apparition was seen, and she matched the description of the woman people saw. And it was suspected that she had been buried there all along since she was reported missing in June of 1983. And so many believe that the earlier blonde woman was a doppelganger of the actual murdered woman years after. So they called this woman that they first saw the future ghost, because it's said that your doppelganger, which basically means your double, is a harbinger of your death if you see yours or if somebody sees yours. And so this woman was exactly described as a mirror image. And also Queen Elizabeth I reportedly saw her doppelganger lying in her bed shortly before her death. And reports have been made that doppelgangers appear as a photo negative of the actual person. And so despite being a very beautiful and serene place, there's lots of stories of Beacon Hill Park, and it's been the site, unfortunately, of many strange deaths, murders, and suicides over the years.
That's fascinating. I had no idea about that. And I certainly didn't know about the Queen Elizabeth I having seen her doppelganger. And I love Tudor history. It's one of my favourite kind of parts of history, British history, that is. Apparently, Queen Elizabeth I's ghost has been seen by our current queen. She often spots her in Windsor Castle, as do the other members of the royal household as well. They see her in places like the library and so forth. She apparently makes her presence very well known. If any member of the royal family ever listened to this podcast, if they have a story of Queen Elizabeth I, I want to know. I'd love to know if it's true. I'd love to know how they kind of see her and so on.
But, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yes, for sure. And that's just the whole eerie. Doppelganger idea is just very interesting, like when you read about
it is
historically and, you know, just what it signifies. So, that park, that's a very, very well-known, widely known story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people do recall it and remember it. And, yeah, just the site.
It's just a strange set of circumstances, isn't it? Like, as you said, having that one instance and then 13 years later having something else but the mirror of it, and then to have the body found, it just seems like something
being
was
it predicted, or was it this actually the spirit of the woman who was murdered, or was it the spirit of somebody else who's just drawing attention to the fact that this missing person is laying there buried, and then they, you know, found her. So yeah, just very, very intriguing, spooky story about, like, you know,
certainly is
just that whole area there. So
if you like this podcast, you can help in different ways. Come and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Help spread the word with friends and family. Share the news of the podcast with other people that may be interested. Down in the description box below is also an access to Patreon, where you can continue to support the podcast further and in the process gain access to some extra goodies. If you ever get the time to write a review, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much, everyone.